Portage Health Foundation is proud to announce it has more than 40 scholarships available. This includes opportunities for students in any major attending any training facility, college, or university. There are 3 designated scholarships for every public school in Baraga, Houghton, Keweenaw, and Onondaga counties, including a general, health careers, and skilled trade scholarships. The deadline to apply is March 3rd. Learn more and download an application at phfgive.org/scholarships. Again, phfgive.org/scholarships. The deadline is March 3rd.
Welcome back to segment 2 of Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation. Learn more about them and their mission at phfgive.org. I have been following in the news, and maybe you have too, the saga of the Colorado River out west and the states that are fighting over the dwindling supply of water that it provides both for drinking and irrigation and also for electrical power generation. And every time I see one of those stories, I am reminded how fortunate we are to have what we have here in the Copper Country, beautiful and relatively pure and full to the brim, Lake Superior. It is an absolute treasure, and we've talked about it in many forms. I thought that an interesting proposal kind of drifted our way this past week. We had a story that we aired on it from the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation. They would like to help clean things up in this area by turning all of the 5 national parks and lakeshores around the Lake Superior, turning them all green and reducing the carbon footprint. I thought that was worth a little bit more discussion. So Tom Irvine is the executive director of the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation. We welcome him to the program. Tom, thank you for your time.
Todd, thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Tell me first about the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation. What is it that you do?
Well, the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation, and for those that can handle it, NPLSF, it takes some practice to be able to spit that out.
Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, does it?
It doesn't quite roll off the tongue, but once you get it, it stays with you. We are the only 501c3 philanthropic partner of the 5 U.S. national parks on Lake Superior. So we are chartered by the basically the federal government to provide financial and strategic support to the national park units that we partner with on Lake Superior.
Now, there are 5 of those. We're obviously intimately familiar here with 2 of them, the Keweenaw National Historical Park and Isle Royale National Park. Both of those are headquartered here in the Copper Country. We tend to get fairly frequently from our area down to Pictured Rocks in Munising, the National Lakeshore area there. But the other 2 are perhaps a little bit less familiar to those in the Copper Country. What are the other 2 parks that are included?
Well, the other 2 parks are Grand Portage National Monument, and Grand Portage is located in the kind of the northeasternmost point of Minnesota, just on the Canadian border. And Grand Portage National Monument is, or was, the only national park located completely within a tribal nation, which is the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. And the Grand Portage National Monument, as well as Isle Royale, share a co-management agreement of those parks with the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. So that's a little long answer. That's one of the parks. The other parks is Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, located off of Bayfield, Wisconsin. And it's 21 islands make up that national park unit, and it's another one of the beautiful jewels of Lake Superior.
I've heard so much good about it. I've never made the trip over, and I really need to do that. I got to put that on my schedule this summer to go, because I've heard so much about it, and I really do need to make that visit. Now, all of these parks seem to be quite different in nature. You've got Apostle Islands with a lot of islands. You've got Isle Royale with basically one big island and a lot of little ones around it. You have a monument, you have a lakeshore, and you have an historical park. How do you balance the different needs of these types of parks when you're looking to support them?
Well, it's kind of like a having five kids, I guess. They they all have their own individual needs and their own personalities, but they all seek love and attention, and we try to provide that. Typically, how we operate is we as a foundation kind of create we call them pillars, and you know pillars are the areas that we support, major projects that we support. So, for instance, this decarbonize the parks project is a pillar that includes all five of the parks. We have other projects that may include two or three of the parks, and some of our projects just are individualized. So being affiliated with the National Park Service, it's kind of within our mandate that we have to create a work plan every year, and that work plan has to be very specific about the projects that we're working on with each of these parks. So we meet with the park superintendents and you know, facilities people and the biologists and interpretation people to come up with projects that not only they need but that we're interested in, and we feel that our supporters and donors will also be interested, because we raise the money to support these projects in the parks.
Who are your supporters and donors? Where do you reach out to try to get this kind of support?
Well, most of our support comes from the the region of the Great Lakes. I mean, we have our parks obviously are in three states: Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Most of our support comes out of those states. We have just a deep well of support from the Upper Peninsula, and you know, particularly the Keweenaw Peninsula. We have several board members that live there. We have board members in the Marquette area, and then on to certainly the Twin Cities area and up to North Shore, Minnesota are very strong pockets of support for us. But we're growing. We have supporters around the world. We have a podcast that we put out multiple times a month, and curiously, we're one of the highest rated podcasts in Belgium. So, go figure.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
That I'll leave you to figure that mystery out.
It may just be one great big extended family over there really likes Lake Superior and these parks, but whatever it is, we have people paying attention to us around the world.
Talking with Tom Irvine, he's the executive director of the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation. Talk to me, Tom, about some of the projects that you have done here on the Keweenaw, either for the National Historic Park or for Isle Royale.
Well, one of our signature projects at Isle Royale involved the repopulating of the wolves back to Isle Royale in 2019. So we were intimately involved with the park and the Minnesota, Michigan, DNR, federal, Ontario province DNR officials, and that was a very very big, very complicated project, putting wolves back on Isle Royale, and it's had its fair share of controversy, both pro and con, but I'm really happy to say that project has turned out very well, and there's a healthy growing population of gray wolves back on the island, managing the moose population and keeping the beavers in check, and life is pretty good at Isle Royale right now.
Things are stabilizing there because the wolves are back. Looking down the road with that particular project, we know what happened to the first bunch. There was so much interbreeding that basically they died out. Are we planning ahead to kind of make sure that we get some fresh DNA into that pack every once in a while?
Well, we're hoping so. You know, certainly part of the impetus to this project that we were on here today to talk about is related to the changing climate and losing that reliable ice bridge from Isle Royale to the mainland that the wolves had traditionally traveled back and forth and allowed fresh DNA and fresh wolves to come over and breed and keep the healthy population, but it's more challenging now. I think we're a ways out, years out from having to worry about that too much, but it's certainly a long-term concern, and that's more for the biologist to speak to than me, so I won't go too deep into that one.
Yeah, and you mentioned the climate change effects that we have seen over the last few years, 10 years, 20 years here on Lake Superior. I have heard stories about Lake Superior freezing over so solidly 75, 80 years ago that they actually slid houses from Calumet down to Lance over the ice. I don't think I've ever seen ice like that in my lifetime, so there's definitely been some modulation in the climate and in how Lake Superior handles things through the winter and through the summer. Your effort to decarbonize the parks probably can play into this?
Well, it's certainly a step. It's a step in the right direction at a time when things need to be done. Lake Superior represents 10% of the fresh water on Earth, and it's one of the fastest warming lakes in the world. With that, we're losing cold water fisheries in the lake. The lake ice is unstable. We've all noticed who live or work around Lake Superior the incredibly violent storms that happen on the lake and battering docks and marinas and lighthouses and a lot of the cultural treasures that we've grown up with around the lakes are in peril. And part of what we can do to make a difference there is we have to build some climate resiliency into these parks. And there's things that we can do to contribute to that, and that's what we're working on.
So what kind of specific things, and I suppose that this is going to be a different plan for each park, because each park has its own different needs.
Definitely. It's honestly, it started out with, the project really started out with Isle Royale, with a target on Isle Royale, and Isle Royale obviously is the only island park of, although Apostle Islands is an island park, its headquarters and main facilities are on the mainland, but Isle Royale is an island park, its operations are on that island, and those operations all run off of diesel generators. So if you talk to a lot of visitors to Isle Royale, including their own staff, something about being in that pristine wilderness and waking up in the morning and hearing the roar of diesel generators just doesn't quite cut it.
A little incongruity there, isn't there?
Absolutely, and honestly, that's been a sore spot for years. We're not the first ones to point it out. One of our board members, as well as the retired park superintendent of Isle Royale, Phyllis Green, mentioned to us a couple years ago that was one of her biggest regrets, that she was never able to fully handle that problem. So it's been recognized for years, and we've kind of finally been able to put a plan together to deal with that that issue as well as others at Isle Royal, and you know, onto the other parks. A lot of it is really, our plan is based around using using technology and equipment that is proven. We're not cutting edge with anything. It's not the latest whiz bang. It's just proven basic technologies that are available, and most of it made in the USA. So
it would seem to me, though, that Isle Royal would be the most difficult one to tackle because it's so isolated out there all by itself. You have to have some way of, I mean, if you were to do the Keweenaw National Historical Park, some of the buildings and such there, there's an electrical grid that if the solar right. power panels run out, the batteries go down, there's an electrical grid that's going to fill in the gaps. That doesn't really exist on Isle Royal.
No, that doesn't exist on Isle Royal. And you certainly have to build, you know, kind of backup and redundancy into your planning. But some of your listeners may or may not know that at Rock Harbor and at Windigo, you know, two opposite ends of Isle Royal, there's already been work started a number of years ago to put solar power and battery supply into those areas, and the long-term plan was to take that into Mott Island, where the administration, the park administration is. So that work has already started, and although it was never completed, there was a time a few years ago when most of the power for those parts of Isle Royal were coming from solar. So it can work, and it does work. And technology has advanced so far just in the last few years that, for instance, a big part of our plan for the different parks is utilizing heat pump technology. So air sourced heat pumps can pull ambient air down to, you know, 20 below zero, 30 per, you know, almost getting to 30 below zero, and be able to create heat from that. So the technology that exists today that is improving by the day is miraculous. And so there's a lot that can be done. And it's not, this project all isn't about building big solar arrays, or it's, A lot of it just probably won't even be that visible to visitors. So,
now contrast that with our Keweenaw Historical Park here on the Keweenaw Peninsula, because that is kind of the opposite of Isle Royal. It's got a whole bunch of little things scattered all over the place.
It does. And Keweenaw Historical Park is a little bit, well, a little bit more challenging in a lot of ways, simply because it's a partner park. It's historical structures like Quincy Mine and the smelter and all these, they're all managed, Calumet Theater. They're all managed by a series of different partners. So with our plan, initially, we're starting with the park owned, fully owned facilities. So their headquarters location, their new artifact storage warehouse building, which will be really amazing, that will which will store the park artifacts from the Keweenaw Park and Isle Royal and Picture Grok. So you know, all the momentum, all the facility momentum going forward will all utilize green renewable energy.
Go ahead, Tom. I'm sorry.
Nope, go ahead. I'm done.
Just talking with Tom Irvine. He's the executive director of the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation. They're looking to decarbonize the parks, which, of course, would have a relative good effect, a healthy effect on Lake Superior, which is our major resource and, of course, what they are devoted to. Now, when you put some of these green installations in, if you put in solar, things of that nature, they can be bulky. They can be unsightly. How do you marry that potential with some of the, on one hand, like with our National Historical Park, some of the historical elements, and on the other hand, at Isle Royale, with some of the natural elements that you want to preserve?
Well, number one, this isn't a off the grid plan. We're planning on where it exists. Most of the land-based parks that are part of our, well, you know, four out of our five parks have grid connections, and the option to have grid options that are utilize green renewable energy exists or will exist soon at all of those locations. So, you know, just like a homeowner can have a check off whether they want to choose the renewable energy grid option or just the regular old, you know, power option with their utility company. That's certainly one of the methods that we are using for this plan. So there's community-based green energy options that will come into play with this plan.
Okay. Now, there are some transportation issues that would come to mind when thinking about Isle Royale as well. You have the Ranger 3 that goes out and back several times a week. You have the ferry service from Copper Harbor. You have another one that comes in from Minnesota. Is there a plan to try to make those more energy efficient?
Well, that's a good question, and that is that's the big asterisk elephant in the room with our plan. It's not although our plan includes land-based transportation, converting to electric land-based transportation for park vehicles and ATVs and you know, snowmobiles, whatever park land-based vehicles exist, those can be swapped out, and then charging stations will be built within park facilities to handle that. Boat transportation is not ready for that yet. The technology, although it's actively being worked on, there are not you know, full electric options for Lake Superior level transportation yet. So that's on the priority list, but you know, we're not able to tackle that one yet.
Now, do you have a timetable for starting this project, finishing this project?
Timetable for starting it is now. We were fortunate enough to have a very committed outside investor who came in, who saw the value of this project and the need for this project, and helped us with a very comprehensive outside engineering study implementation plan that took about 8 months to put together. That covered this project park by park, basically every last detail of what to do, how to do it, how much it's going to cost, and just all the components of it. So this plan itself is kind of creating you know, using renewable energy and really creating climate resilience within the parks is is one of the top priorities of the National Park Service. So,
all right, and I have to cut you off, Tom, because we're just about out of time here. But I want, before we wrap it up, if folks are interested in this project or are interested in learning more about the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation, how can they find out more about you?
Go to nplsf.org, National Parks Lake Superior Foundation.org.
Very good. Tom Irvine, thank you so much for your time. Good luck with this project. I'm going to be interested to see how it plays out.
Thanks so much.